Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. This is Dave Charest, Content Manager here at Constant Contact, and I'm once again joined by my esteemed colleagues who will introduce themselves, starting with Kristen.
My name's Kristen. Hi, I'm Kristen Curtis. I'm a social media specialist at Constant Contact, and I am drinking a Blue Moon.
My name is Dave Gerhardt. I work on the marketing communications team, and I am unfortunately drinking a Heineken right now because there was nothing else left. It's okay.
But he'll take it.
I'm okay with that.
I'm Erica Ayotte. I'm our social media manager, and I am drinking a Red Stripe.
And I'm Josh Mendelson. I'm working our product marketing team, and I am having a wonderful Samuel Adams Summer Ale.
Good choice. Yum and delicious. Thanks again for joining us. Today we've got some interesting news in regards to Google Plus. And
is it interesting?
Maybe. We'll find out. I guess we'll let you guys be the judge of that. But Google Plus Local has now come out to replace Google Places. And I guess we should probably talk a little bit about what was Google Places.
I think
a lot of people don't know. It's such a simple thing that I think a lot of people didn't realize what it actually was. All Google Places was, and correct me if I'm wrong, if somebody else knows better, but it's when you would search for a business and you'd get that result with the little pin, and it would have the map and the information to be able to call the business right from that place and the hours. So basically they've taken that and they've integrated it into Google Plus, added a tab called Google Plus Local. And I actually think it's pretty cool because they've taken, last year they acquired Zagat, and they've basically taken the review part of Zagat and added it into Google
Is
Places.
It Zagat? Is that how
you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's
how you pronounce
it. Zagat.
Yeah, I've been wrong.
It sounds like a Boston thing. Yeah, it was on Zagat.
You learn something new every day.
So I think it's good because I think it kind of, it centralizes, you know, when you search for a business, not only now do you see the listing and the hours and the menu, but you can also see reviews. And the biggest difference between Zagat reviews and Yelp is that Zagat, those reviews are edited by a kind of board or a third party. So
they're professional reviews.
Exactly.
One of the big
gripes with Yelp is that I might think, this is where Erica will probably make a joke, I might think that Applebee's, to my taste, is a 5-star restaurant. She doesn't. So when she goes to search it and sees my 5-star rating, it's not the same to her scale. So
theoretically, you know, you don't have to interpret the rating on Zagat the way you do on Yelp. But I also feel like it's sort of in some ways a step backwards, right? You know, from a social web standpoint, it's like, well, do I really care what some person I've never heard of thinks, or do I still want to know what people like me think about?
Well, but that's the thing, though, is part of what happens with the new Google Plus Local pages is that people that you have in your circles, if they've reviewed or talked about a particular place, those people will come up. So
that solves
the
problem.
So you'll
of relevancy.
See, you can choose.
But
you know,
reviewed
you can
on what?
Look at, reviewed on Google Places. Google
but
Plus.
That's the
Google.
Biggest issue, is how many people have circles.
So, right. So that's the issue. And that's, I think, my biggest question to begin with. I mean, who even uses Google Places to begin with?
To Dave's point, people are using it without knowing.
I'm using it, but I'm going into Google Search, and I'm just typing, and then it shows up.
As a business owner, you do have to claim it and keep it updated.
Absolutely. Like, make sure the information is correct, and you definitely want to, you know, spend the 10 minutes to make sure that it's connected to your account and all of that great stuff that you should do just by being responsible. But I feel like as a user and as a marketer, you know,
as an engagement platform,
it's not there. You know, I'd rather, if I'm walking down the street, I'm going to search on Yelp, or I might search on Google, but.
And I feel like you have to, like, what did we experiment with? It's like 3 clicks to actually
it's very, unless you're in Google Plus itself.
And is anyone?
So I think, I think that's what we need to think about in terms of like the use of it, right? So if you search on Google, which you would probably do, right? Yeah. In order to get into this Google Plus Local page, it takes you like 3 or 4 clicks to actually get there. But if you're in Google Plus, which you probably aren't, you can get there quicker.
Right.
Well, but it's not necessarily...
No, I think it's actually... I'm not sure if that's true. I think that if you search, whether you're on Maps or Google.com, if you search for that business now, places are completely wiped out, and the link that you see is the link to the Google Plus
that
local.
It is, but when you click, what happened was you click the pin, and then it takes you to a map.
Right.
Then you have to click more info to get to the Google Plus page.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's actually like a few steps you have to take to actually get to that point, unless you're right within Google Plus. So I mean, let's bottom line this. I mean, what should small businesses care about this? Like, what do they need to do?
I think
it depends on what happens, because the fact of the matter is if this actually becomes something that people are interested in,
mm-hmm.
you as a small business owner need to create a Google Plus account, and you need to make sure that what's going on your Google Plus location or
mm-hmm.
local
page, and
let's just clarify that. I think that would mean you have to make sure that, like, even if you're not on Google Plus or whatever, I think the first step would be just to make sure you do claim your
place. First, you need to claim
it,
you need
your local
to make
page.
Sure that your hours are correct and your address is correct and your phone number is correct, first and foremost. And then, I mean, truly and honestly, it makes more sense if people are actually using this, which I think they will be, solely because you can go into Google search and you can type whatever and it will pop up. It's not something that you necessarily need to go searching for. I think it will be beneficial to a small business owner
The real benefit to a merchant is it's a free listing that's a little bit more interactive, a little bit more rich. It's a better listing experience for your business. And it's kind of just because it's Google, it is whatever you make out of it. The more information you want to add there, the more you want to get that involved with your Google Plus business page, the more value you might see from it.
And my question really is a lot of people, it was 1 to 5 as a rating, and now they've gone to Zagat's rating of 30. Are there enough people out there who use Zagat who will look at it and know, like, that's what that means? Because when I was looking at a screenshot, I mean, it said, like, food 20 and,
Yeah.
And you're not going to do the work.
It's much more detailed.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, anything that Google does is kind of like this. It's technically sweet, but whether they get a critical mass to do not anything Google does, let me rephrase it, anything Google does in trying to do the
other
social sphere. Other than search. It's very much like, it's very cool. The technology is cool. Whether they get the critical mass to be there is another. So I think if I can summarize what we suggest for small businesses is that they definitely claim their location. They make sure all the information is up to date. But until people actually start using it and we see a critical mass, it's really not worth small businesses' time to spend a lot of time there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, one of the things that has also come out, and I can't remember honestly if we've talked about this on the podcast or not, is, Apple is phasing Google Maps out of the standard software for iPads and iPhones. And I think, Google's sort of 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, or 3 steps back, because I'm just going to search for stuff on my phone. And whatever that mechanism is that comes up, I don't care. I don't have a map preference necessarily. So they're putting all this effort into creating a map system, and reviews are built into that. But one of the huge access points to that is going away.
Yeah.
Or at least people are going to have to choose to use it instead
of
just use it by default.
Just speaks to everything becoming mobile first. You don't care how you're accessing it. It's just you're reaching into your pocket and you're grabbing your phone. But
it needs to be as simple as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. So we're going to move to a listener question now. And the question we have today are, what are the pros and cons of hiring someone to do your hands-on social media, such as posting and doing the day-to-day activities around social media? I know this is kind of a hot topic around here, so who wants to jump in first?
I think Josh does.
I'll jump in first.
He was kind of wiggling in his
seat. I know.
I just want him to answer so I can refute him.
Right, exactly. I'm going to say my piece and get out of the room. It makes me really nervous when people outsource social media, especially if you're a very small business. If you have a professional marketer or you usually hire agencies and you understand how to work with them to give the right kind of information to them to empower them to speak on your behalf, that's fine. But for a lot of small businesses, the business is you, right? The business – and you need to be speaking on social media in your voice from your point of view. And someone who is not in your store or in your office every day is really not able to do that in most cases. And I think, the notion of, oh, my nephew understands Facebook, so he can do my social presence, it's not going to be as personal or as compelling as if you were able to do it yourself.
And I agree with you. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that small businesses make is that they take someone who is very young and inexperienced or who knows how to use the technology and says, here you go. Here's the biggest mouthpiece that you can use to talk about my business. go for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, what you should do is, you know, learn, either find someone who understands the business and teach them how to use the tool, or really make the person who understands the technology understand your business.
Yeah.
There has to
so
be both.
It's like saying, I watch a lot of TV, so I'm going to do your TV
right.
advertising.
And
yeah.
So I, prior to here, I used to work at an agency, and one of our, we used to do social media as part of our, you know, work for clients. And the clients that it was successful for were the clients that we actually understood and understood their business.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, keep in mind, these were tech companies with big budgets that they could allocate to, you know, we would have separate meetings, you know, hourly meetings each week to just talk about how we were going to do their social media.
Yeah.
But obviously these are resources that small business owners don't have.
Right.
Which is the pain point for trying to find
so
someone in the
we,
first
we
place.
Had
right.
the, we had the opportunity to, you know, have a Tuesday morning check-in just to talk about social media and how we were going to be, you know, messaging things on that channel. But, you know, I think there's so many tools out there today that make it so easy to manage and don't take a lot of time, that it's better, you're better off because you know your business better than anybody else does for
right.
you to do.
Don't take quantity over quality.
But I think
yeah.
one of the things that often gets overlooked in this situation is just there's a simple misunderstanding and there's lack of strategic development around what you want to
yeah.
do with the social platforms, right? So you
yeah.
think, okay, I'm going to start a Facebook page and I'm going to have my cousin Larry do the Facebook updates. And you think that that's just going to bring you either more money or more customers, or it's going to work just because you have a Facebook page now. But there's actually like a lot of stuff involved in building up an audience and doing these things that...
And connecting the dots to make
yeah.
sure that you are... I liken it to, you know, people think, all right, I'm going to post on Facebook and then I get profit. And it's
right.
like...
Right. And
you
it
know,
doesn't
that's like,
work like
it's
that.
Like,
yeah.
No, there's...
What's the infographic like? And then... Like trolls.
It's like
right,
a,
exactly.
it's actually really about
yeah.
building a strategic plan and building a map to how that
and
eventually
like really
over time
tactically
leads
specific.
To, yeah.
Like I always liken it to, you know, shooting off a rocket into space and not aiming at a planet.
Yeah.
It's like you can do all the posting you want, but unless you need, there's really like two things that you need to do. You need to do a lot of community development and making sure that you're engaging your audience and making sure that you're building an advocacy base.
Yeah.
But beyond that, if you want to drive business goals, then you need to make sure that you have some business goals to drive to.
Yeah.
Like for example, if one of your goals is to drive people to a webinar, you need to, you know, have a landing page and drive
yeah.
people there through email and through social posts and through all these other things. And then you have to make sure that you can measure who came from where as well.
Yeah.
Like did most of these signups come from Facebook? And so that's how you can start to measure some business goals.
So I think one of the big things, and we'll get to Kristen, is that I think one of the big things is that you really need to understand how it works. Like you
right.
can't just turn it over to somebody and be like, okay, like you really need to understand what goes into it so that you can make sure that they're doing it the correct way and that you understand how it's going
to
work.
And that's what I was actually just about to say, is I think the pro is the fact that you will hire somebody who understands social media and who will know the tools
mm-hmm.
and be able to do that kind of thing. But I think the con is the fact that it's going to take you the same amount of time anyway if you want to do it correctly, because you have to have so many meetings to tell them exactly who you are and what you want, and
yeah.
so many other meetings to make sure that they're up on what you're doing and who your customers are and everything else. It really doesn't end up saving you time at the end.
Hmm. Interesting. Hmm. All right. Well, we have time for Kristen's tip, so let's see what we get.
Okay, well, my tip today is about LinkedIn.
Ooh.
It is very easy to make LinkedIn spammy, but how do you make it yours? How do you make yours stand out? The first thing to know is your content stays active much longer than Twitter or Facebook. There's no point to post articles or discussions more than once or twice a week. It's also a great idea to answer questions other users have posted in discussions. But just like anywhere else, make sure you're not self-promoting your way into the spam bucket. Keep it simple, yet active, and you should succeed.
Great. Excellent. Thanks so much, Kristen, and thank you everyone for listening. We'll catch
Send
you next
in
time.
Your questions.
Please do.